Chapter 7. Who will go? We all looked at the cloth. Finally, I said, "What good will that do?" "Do you know why the elves have gone bad?" replied the old woman. "Because of the stone called the Queen's Belly Button," said Moongobble. She nodded. "And the only way to help them is to get that stone away from them. But if you try, what is to stop you from turning evil yourselves?" "We're still working on that," said Moongobble, sounding a little embarrassed. "So brave," sighed the old lady, "and so foolish. All right, listen. There are two ways to block the stone's spell." "What are they?" I asked eagerly. "The first and hardest way is with the power of a good heart." "My cousins have good hearts," protested Arthur. "It didn't save them." "They did not have advanced warning," said the old woman. "You do. You know what the stone is and what it can do. Whoever carries it must fight with all his might to hold on to what he knows is good." "How do you do that?" I asked. "Think of the good things in your life. Think of the people you love. Hold them in your heart. They will be your shield against evil. Still, it's tricky and will take constant struggle. So here is the easier way. Put the Queen's Belly Button inside this bag. It will block the spell." "She could have told us that to begin with," muttered Irk. "My thanks, madam," said Moongobble. Before he could say anything else, we heard a sound. Turning, we saw four elves running toward us. I got ready to fight, though it didn't seem as if it could be much of a battle when they were so small. But they didn't want to fight. "Arthur," they called. "Arthur, thank goodness we found you." "Bilbog," cried Arthur. "Dimstat, Thignum, Borful, what are you doing here? I thought you were on a quest." "We were," said the first of them. "We just got back last night." "Oh, Arthur, it was awful. It's as if everyone has gone crazy. What has happened to our home?" "Come over here and we'll explain," said Moongobble. As the four elves started toward us, I turned to say something to the old lady. To my surprise, she was gone. We looked but could find no sign of her. "Just what you'd expect from an old woman you met in Bogfester Swamp," muttered Irk. Arthur had been talking to the other elves while the rest of us looked for the old lady. "Listen," he said, "things are worse than we thought. Bilbog told me that the elves are making plans to take over the whole kingdom. We have to do something fast. They could start a war between the magicians and the elves that would mean doom and destruction for everyone." "We can't do anything until we know more," said Irk. "One of us should do some spying." "The only ones who can spy in an elf village are elves," pointed out Moongobble. "That's no good," said Arthur. "We're all too well known." "Then we must shrink one of us," said Moongobble. "Stink one of us," said the rusty knight. "Is that how we're going to fight the evil smell?" "Shrink," bellowed Irk. "We're going to shrink one of us." "Who are we going to shrink?" asked the rusty knight. "Me, of course," said Moongobble. "This is my mighty task." Arthur laughed. "No one is going to believe you're an elf, Moongobble. You look too old." "That goes for you, too," he said, before the rusty knight could volunteer. Suddenly I knew who it had to be. "I'll do what I said. Remember, I'm very good at sneaking." "We can't send you, Edward," said Moongobble. "We're supposed to keep you out of real danger." "I think we have to send Edward," said Irk. "This quest has changed. It isn't just to let you keep doing magic now. It's to save the kingdom from a terrible war." "Irk is right," said Arthur. "Edward is our only chance." Suddenly, I wondered if this was such a good idea after all. While Arthur taught me how to pretend to be an elf, the others went looking for the things Moongobble needed to make a shrinking potion. All too soon, they were back, and it was time for me to get small. I wondered if Moongobble would really shrink me or just turn me into cheese. Chapter 8. Shrinking. "I don't do potions very well," said Moongobble, sounding worried. He was stirring a pot. In the pot were the things my friends had gathered, including tiny mushrooms, an earthworm's eyebrow, several ant toes, and some fuzz from a baby bird. "Fuzz from a baby bird?" I cried. "Don't worry," said Irk. "The little tweeter is fine. His mother gave it to me." Moongobble tossed other things in the kettle, too, including some stuff he had brought from the cottage. It was the worst-smelling brew I had ever sniffed, like a combination of dead fish and rotten cabbage. The rusty knight looked puzzled. "I thought we came to fight an evil smell, not make one," he muttered. The potion bubbled and boiled for hours, getting thicker and smellier as it did. Finally, the kettle held only a cup of brew. Moongobble scooped it out and handed it to me. It was thick and nasty looking. "Do I have to drink this?" I asked. "Not if you don't want to," he said gently, "but it's the only way to shrink you." Holding my nose, I tipped the cup into my mouth. "Blech," I cried, "that's awful." Then my head began to spin. When I opened my eyes, I didn't feel any different. I thought the potion hadn't worked until I glanced around. Next to me was an oak leaf that looked as big as my bed. Beside the leaf was an acorn I would have needed both hands to lift. "How do you feel, Edward?" I looked up and screamed. Moongobble towered above me, bigger than any giant I could have imagined. Fireball was next to him, to my eyes no longer a little dragon, but a huge monster. I felt a hand on my shoulder and spun around. It was Arfur, who was now exactly the same height as me. Next to him squatted Urk. His big mouth was bigger than my head. If he had been willing, I could have ridden him like a pony. "How can you stand it?" I asked Arfur. The elf looked puzzled. "What do you mean? Isn't the world too scary for you?" Arfur smiled. "If you've been this size your whole life, it just seems normal. You'll get used to it." I looked up again. The rusty knight was bending toward me. His mustache looked like a gray hedgerow. "I don't think I'll ever get used to this," I said. "Things won't be so bad once you're in the village," said Arfur. "Everyone there will be the same size as you. They'll all be evil, of course, because of the stone, but at least they'll be the same size as you. Let's switch clothes." I didn't want to undress in front of everyone, so Arfur and I went behind a tree. "Very good," said Urk when we came out. "There's only one problem." "What?" I asked. "Your ears. They're too round for you to be an elf." I touched my ears. Urk was right. Moongobble waved his wand over me and said, "Iggle, biggle, earsum, grope points." I saw a flash of blue light. It felt as if someone was pulling on my ears. "Good grief," cried Urk, "that actually worked. You may finally be getting the hang of this, Moongobble." I touched the tips of my ears. They were indeed pointed like an elf's. "I guess I'd better be on my way," I said, a little nervously. "Not yet," said Arfur. "First you have to learn to fly." "Won't the elves be more likely to notice me that way?" "Not if you fly in at night and hide the winged wonder before you enter the village. I know a place where you can do that. If you get in trouble, it will be harder for them to catch you if you can fly." I hadn't thought about the evil elves trying to catch me. It was scary. Arfur gave me some tips on how to ride the winged wonder, then said, "All right, give it a try." I hopped on and began to pedal. The wings flapped, but I didn't move. "Pedal harder," shouted Arfur. "Pedal harder." I pedaled harder. Suddenly, the winged wonder lifted into the air. "Look," I shouted, "I'm flying." Arfur cried, "Edward, watch out!"